This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hill's, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
What's happening, everybody? Welcome into a brand new episode of Crossed Up. Anthony Sanfilippo's here. I'm Bob Wankel. It's a Monday morning. The Phillies pick up their first series victory of the season, 2 out of 3 against the Washington Nationals. But true to our brand, we record this podcast after a loss. And I would say that in the 6 or 7 years that we've been doing this, what, roughly 80% of our shows tend to come after a loss. So we're here to bring some sunshine to your Monday morning. It was not a great series finale for the Phillies, Anthony, certainly. But let's break down what we saw this weekend and kind of get into where things stand through 9 games.
Well, I'll be honest with you, Bob. I wasn't all that impressed with the weekend. Like, they won the series, and that's great, right? You got to win a series against the Washington Nationals. You can't lose it to them. They should have swept, and because that Nationals team stinks. And even in the 2 wins, they weren't overly impressive, especially at the plate. Pitching was pretty good, right? Pitching was pretty solid. They've got a better performance from Nola. It wasn't perfect, but it was better. The walks were a little bit concerning. But went, 5 2/3? Doesn't give up a run. So that's successful. Bullpen has been pretty solid. Ranger Suarez was good. Not great, but good. Christopher Sanchez was not great.
No, he was not very good yesterday.
Yeah, and so, but other than that, like, I thought that their pitching has been pretty darn good. Bullpen, it's been really good. But the lineup, man, it's just really inconsistent. Stupid base running yet again. And I just, you know, there's only a couple guys that are going right now. And you never expect everybody to be going, Bob, at the same time, but you need more than just a couple.
You would like to see more than 2 guys going at the same time.
Yes. Yes, that's the thing.
Yeah. I think that there's some fair concerns there. You look at this offense through 9 games, it's scoring 4 runs per game on the nose. That's tied with the 1-9 Miami Marlins, Anthony. So just to kind of put that in a different context, and certainly you can go through the individuals and talk about who's slumping and who's really kind of acting like an anchor to this lineup right now. And I don't mean anchor in a good way, but it's across the outfield. Phillies outfielders so far this season, 497 OPS, third worst in all of baseball. It's actually hard to imagine that there's been an outfield less productive than the Phillies through, 10 days. And they have a 230 slugging percentage, which is dead last. That's Nick Castellanos, obviously, and then your Johan Rojas, Christian Pache, Whit Merrifield combination. Brandon Marsh is doing his best to sort of prop that up, but it's not like Brandon Marsh has been Mickey Mantle through 9 games either here. So, listen, it has been a miserable start for that group, and I think that the concern does spread beyond it a little bit. You go into the infield and you see what Trey Turner has done. I believe he's hitting .222 this morning, 3-for-13 this weekend. Looked like for a second he might tie the game in the 9th inning yesterday, but kind of a microcosm of his entire season. Lots of hope and then kind of immediate deflation. So it has been a struggle for this offense. And as you noted, 6 outs they've made on the base pass dating back to just last Sunday. So when you're talking about a team that's scuffling like this offensively, you just can't keep doing dumb shit over and over again. And if there's any positive, they were probably worse on the bases at the start of last season before they sort of figured it out. So that's where we're at here.
Yeah, but I don't understand how you're dumb on the bases. Like, how are you dumb at any point on the bases?
I think that
as a professional ball player,
there's 2 ways that you can be dumb on the bases. You're just not paying attention and you get caught. And I think that that's happened. I thought that Johan Rojas getting picked off as a pinch runner last week against the Reds was a matter of just not being focused. And then I think that there's also a little bit of trying to do too much. So if you're Kyle Schwarber and you're on first base yesterday and you see a flare out the center field, you've got to read that ball. And he knows it. He talked about it after the game. He's like, I got to clean that up. We have to clean this stuff up. So I don't think we're out of turn here talking about that this is sloppy and looks like shit. But you, I think what he's in the moment thinking is, I have an opportunity maybe to go first to third here. Now, with his speed, I know he's a little bit more trim and limber this year. I still don't think he's going first to third on that ball. But when you're not hitting, you do kind of, you know, try to force things that aren't there sometimes, and this is what happens.
I guess. But that's still, I mean, it's know the situation, right? I mean, it's a close game. It's a one-run game. I think it was a one-run game at that point. It might have been tied. I don't remember if it was before the Nationals took the lead or not. But either way, it was a tie game or one-run game. You can't be uber aggressive in those moments. Like at that point, you have to be smart within the game, within where it's at. Look, if you're trailing and you want to try and play catch up and you want to be a little bit aggressive, or if you're ahead and you're looking for that insurance run, okay, fine. I'm okay with it a little bit. You know, I'm not anti-aggression on the bases, but I think that there's a moment to be aggressive and then there's a moment to not be aggressive. And I didn't think that was one to be aggressive. And I'm glad that he admitted that it was a mistake and he's got to clean it up, because it was kind of boneheaded. Like you have to see that right away. You have to know that kid playing center field for them, Jacob Young, he is fast as can be, and he's probably going to get to that ball. And you're halfway, not more than halfway. That's it.
Yeah, I mean, there's no question about it. And it was a disappointing end to a series that if the Phillies were playing any other team, maybe 26 of the other teams in baseball right now, they probably don't win the series. They did not play very well. I mean, they got a couple decent starts. Obviously, Aaron Nola was good. Bounce back performance for him. I think everyone feels good about that. But if you just take a step back, forget the series, the pitching overall has been really good for this team. And we talked a little bit about it on Friday, and the bullpen has been good. They were excellent again this weekend. You just go through some of these things here, dating back to last Sunday, so Easter Sunday, Fangraphs WAR, 0.7 is first overall bullpens in baseball. K rate, 31.1% first overall. K per nine, 11, third overall. Batting average against, 179. Phillies pitchers have limited opponents to over the last week plus here. 2.42 ERA. It's like really good. And the starting rotation has been excellent. I know Christopher Sanchez wasn't great yesterday, and Aaron Nola was rocky in his first start, but you look at it and how it stacks up across the sport, a lot of top five, performances across many metrics. So you're getting the pitching, you're not getting the hitting, and it's disappointing. It's really disappointing, and not to belabor the point, but I feel like we may be talking about this for the foreseeable future. It's the Trey Turner bounce back year. He's a top 20 player in baseball. He's being paid like one, certainly. He's just going to hit the ground running this year. He hasn't. Nick Castellanos looks utterly lost, and we can dive into that in a little bit more detail. The numbers are the numbers. Like, you don't need to have me sit here and tell you the numbers. We all know that they're pretty gross right now, but the concern for me is the swings are just so tentative. Like, everything, it looks just like a work in progress right now, and you would hope that a lot of those issues would be ironed out in Clearwater. You'd hope that a lot of that stuff would get ironed out in March. He just looks like a guy that's totally feeling for it right now. And my concern, as I noted last week, is at what point as the season progresses here, is it 15 games, 20 games, 40 games, where this thing kind of snowballs him on him to the point where you go, is he going to get out of this? And that doubt, I'm sorry, maybe it's an overreaction on my part, kind of crept in there a little bit for me.
Yeah. I mean, well, we'll talk about Castellanos now. I hear what you're saying, and I've always been a guy to say, you know, players like him, they're so streaky, they figure it out eventually, and then they get hot for a little while, and then they go through these cold slumps, and it's frustrating to watch, but you always can kind of expect it and figure and rely on the guy to kind of have his breakout at some point. Okay, that said, I'm more concerned this time, and I'll tell you why I'm more concerned. I'm looking at a different swing with him. And I texted you about this.
Yes.
And, you know, I'm going to wait till the weekend when they're back home and I have a chance to actually ask him about it, because I'm sitting watching it on TV. You don't see it when you're in the ballpark, right? But you see it on television. He's a lot more, I don't know how to describe it, Bob. He's more closed. You see his ass more when he's standing at the plate.
And I feel like it's taking him longer to get the swing through the zone. I just,
you know why he's more closed, right? You know why he's more closed is because he's trying to get to the outside part.
Outside pitch. Yeah, he's trying to get the outside pitch. I get it, but he's still swinging and missing pitches. And when he's making contact, he's making incredibly weak contact. And so what I guess the question that I would say to you as a baseball coach, a former baseball coach, is if you have that guy and you understand why he's doing it, if he's still got the same swing and miss rate or chase rate at pitches, you know, off the plate, but he's got weaker contact, wouldn't you tell that player to go back to doing what he was doing before? You'd rather have the chase and be frustrated about it, but still have the production than not have the production, because he just does not look comfortable swinging like this.
Well, I guess that the retort to that is that the vulnerability is such that every team is just going to keep going after it and going after it and going after it. And because he's not really shown an ability to counteract it with his traditional swing, it's now taking a mechanical adjustment to try to get there. And I would almost say if there is a different setup, if there is a different approach in terms of his swing mechanics, in a way, I could almost take solace in that, because I say, all right, like, he's now kind of adjusting on the fly. It might take him a couple weeks to get to the point, like, where he is feeling a little bit more confident, a little bit more in rhythm, which we know is a big part of his game. But yeah, I mean, it certainly is concerning, because that vulnerability was there. Now he's altering things as we go here in season. It has not looked good. The numbers are what they are. We know that he's a very thoughtful player. And I mean that to his credit, but in a lot of ways, like, you do wonder, like, is he sitting there thinking, like, okay, you know, here we go again. You look at his numbers last year, you talk about the inconsistencies of it, but in March and April of last year, he hit .313. In May, he hit .265. In June, he hit .351. July was his month where he really struggled. He hit .162. He struck out a ton. And you know, like, are we just having that July here in April this time and it'll all be good? Maybe, but I'd feel a lot better about it if those struggles came on the heels of a good start. And that it has started like this, to me, is cause for concern.
Yeah. I mean, I guess the one, and it's a very small bit of solace to take with this, Nick Castellanos is leading the team in walks so far this season.
Yeah. Yes, he is.
And he's fourth in strikeouts, which is not, I mean, you know, 9 strikeouts in 9 games is, you know, is not a great number, but it's certainly not the worst thing in the world. And there's 3 guys who are striking out more than him.
Well, let me give you this. He has made a significant reduction in his outside the zone swings here through 9 games. So last year and the year prior, you ready for this? 39.9% swings outside of the zone in 22, 39.4% last year. He's got a 31.6%. Now, again, this is a time where I will use the sample size to say, like, you know, hey, alert, alert. I can't read too much into it, but it does seem like, and especially this past weekend, it seems like there's been a little bit more selectivity, but it is not resulted or translated into getting pitches to hit and then doing damage. Like, that's obviously the key part. I don't need Nick Castellanos to walk 65 times this year. I need him to hit, you know, for 40 doubles and 25 home runs. That's what I need him to do. So, you know, I don't want to say that he's a free swinger and then he gets himself into trouble. Like, and then when he's making improvements, just totally discredit that. But there's a fine line here too.
Yeah. And it makes you wonder too, though, Bob, I guess maybe this is an overreaction. Maybe that's the thing. Maybe him being more selective will eventually lead to better pitches in the zone for him to hit, and that you just got to be patient with it, right? And if you want to take the optimistic viewpoint on it, maybe that's what's coming. You know, the pitchers are still pitching him like they used to pitch him. And, you know, maybe once they realize he's laying off of those pitches out of the zone a little bit, maybe they have to come into the zone because, oh, well, now we don't want to walk the guy because, you know, he's starting to walk a little bit. Maybe then he'll do the damage we get. But I don't know. Is that how you have to? Is that what you got to do? Cross your fingers and hope that's the case?
Yeah, I mean, this is where, like, you go into, like, the StatCast numbers and stuff, and it drives me nuts. Like, I like StatCast, and I think that anecdotally you can find some pretty interesting numbers that sort of support what you see or allows you to think about things maybe in a different way than you usually would. But you dive into his StatCast metrics. Are you ready for this? He hasn't, according to StatCast, like, tell me how this all shakes out. Yeah. According to StatCast, he has not barreled a baseball yet this season, which I believe, like, that kind of validates what I've seen. Mm-hmm. His hard hit percentage, though, 47.6%, is up year over year from 43%. Like, what has Nick Castellanos really hit hard this season? His average, he's hitting 133. His expected batting average is 162. So, like, there are numbers there that certainly validate what I'm seeing. I'm like, well, he hasn't really made good contact. This is not a product of bad luck thus far. But then the hard hit percentage is actually pretty decent. So, you know, go figure. But check it out. I mean, he's slugging 133 right now. Like, that is impossibly low. And it is especially impossibly low for a corner outfielder. And it's very impossibly low for a corner outfielder making $20 million. You expect to do damage in the back end of your lineup. So it's a problem. Like, yeah. I'm not saying that it's going to be a problem for the remaining 153 games, but through nine, you want to talk about why the Phillies offense has left a lot to be desired. He's probably at the top of the list right now.
Yeah, him and then Turner, who in 36 at bats has struck out 12 times.
Yeah.
That's ridiculous. That's a lot of strikeouts.
And you just wonder, man, like, you know, again, like, and I feel like I'm harping on the momentum and snowballing things so much. Like, I don't want to seem like I'm saying that these guys are head cases. I'm not trying to say that. I'm saying that in light of the struggles that they've had, and each of them have openly talked about and kind of regaining their confidence, I feel like that validates the position in this conversation. And so the reason why I mentioned that with Trey Turner, it's because, well, nothing looks easy for him right now. He's a guy that is so physically gifted. If you follow Trey Turner the previous 5-6 years before he arrived here, he's a guy that you watch play baseball and say, everything comes easy to this guy. He is such a good athlete. He has such good speed. He's never been like a gold glove caliber defensive player in my mind, but he could get the job done just with the physical tools. The power is there. We saw that in waves last year. Like, everything works for this guy. There's a reason that they gave him the contract that they gave him. And it seemed like a great deal at the time. And maybe it ultimately turns out to be one. But right now, Anthony, everything looks hard for him. At the plate, it looks hard. Making stops defensively looks hard. Making consistent throws on routine balls looks hard. I mean, we're at a point where he can't even make a routine tag play without you holding your breath. And I thought that he was a big reason the Phillies lost that game yesterday from a defensive standpoint. I know that JT Realmuto was credited with an error on the throw out to second base that went into center field. I thought he could have gotten in front of that and at least kept the ball in the infield, preventing the runner from getting to third, which ultimately led to a run. And I think on the Harper play where they had the pickoff and Harper throws the ball down to second, I don't know what the hell Ruben Amaro Jr. was watching yesterday. You know, he was talking about how the throw kind of took Turner towards the, if you're looking from Harper's viewpoint, the left side of the bag. The throw might have been tilted to that direction a little bit, but it was there in plenty of time and accurate enough that Turner, all he has to do is get the damn glove in front of the bag and there's an out. Instead, he's feeling for the base runner and he slides in underneath of it. Like, that's 101 stuff, man.
And look, I get that things have changed where you're not allowed to block the bag anymore, right? But that doesn't mean that you at this point should not have figured out what your positioning should be.
Yeah.
Right. I know that that's a change, right? You can't block the bag. All right, fine. But you had an entire spring training and workouts to figure out, okay, here's where I'm going to position myself on the bag so that I can have a nice, easy swipe down to get the tag down.
Yeah.
And he looked so incredibly uncomfortable on that play.
Yeah.
Incredibly, and the throw was not way offline that he had a lunge to the bag. Like, he just looked like he was not comfortable standing there. And you're right, I think he could have blocked the throw by Realmuto that ends up being, I guess,
a little bit tougher. Like, I'll give him a little bit more of a you know, leeway on that one, just because you're trying to in one motion. It's not a great throw by Realmuto. You have to come back across the bag. You're trying basically to get the out there. You're going to have to do it all in one motion. There's no catch, you know, regather and go to the runner. It's got to just be in one fell swoop. So, okay. probably more annoying just because the runner doesn't advance to third, and then it ultimately proves the difference, frankly. But on the play from Harper, like, they've just got to figure that out. And teams now are starting to put a lot of pressure on the Phillies in terms of the run game. And St. Louis can run around a little bit, and it's going to be really interesting to see what happens. Because if you're doing any advanced scouting whatsoever, and you look at what was happening at the end of the regular season last year with the Phillies, teams started to run on them a lot. They sort of tried to correct and crack down on in the playoffs. It was a point of emphasis. Rob Thompson actually was talking about this after the game yesterday. Like, we worked on this in spring training. We knew that teams were going to come in and try to put pressure against us on the bases. Right now, I mean, teams are just having their way. And we know that Real Muto's a good catcher. We know he's got a good arm. Some of this is on the staff. Some of this is on the infield mechanics behind the operation. It's got to get cleaned up because it's a huge vulnerability right now, and teams are just going to have a field day with it.
Yeah, it is. It is. And, the Nationals maybe kind of laid the groundwork for other teams.
Yeah.
You know, the way that they got really aggressive on them yesterday.
And teams are going to do it. Like, this translates back to college baseball, to high school baseball. If we have a game plan, we see a weakness on a team. If I don't like a left fielder's arm going into a game, he might throw out my runner at some point. Like, if I try to score him on a shallow single, maybe I get my guy gunned down at the plate. But I'm going to make you show me at least one time that you can do it before I make an adjustment. So if I'm St. Louis or I'm any of the Phillies' future opponents, until you show me that you can make the adjustment, I am going to take advantage of it.
Absolutely. 1,000%.
Now, here's where, just to bring it all full circle, for one moment, or maybe for 4 seconds yesterday, it did look like Turner might actually tie the game. Mm-hmm. He made solid contact. It's the first time that we really saw him drive a ball all season, and it just sort of died out there, fall short at the fence. And it's obviously a huge play because it preserves the lead for the Nationals. The Phillies don't make a comeback. But just for him personally, you'd think, like, there's the moment. That's the one that gets you on track. Now let's run with it. And so you see his reaction coming around first base, and you kind of just know, like, he's saying, what else can go wrong right now?
Yeah, I think it was one of the – yesterday kind of reminded me of the game down in Florida last year, Miami. Remember that game that was right before the standing ovation,
that was
right?
Before the standing ovation, yes.
Yeah, but I'm saying, like, he had that look on his face yesterday
of
frustration. He struck out 3 times in the game before that. You know, like you said, he had the plays at second base where he just didn't look comfortable. This coming off of, I guess it was Saturday that he had it, that he booted a ball or overthrew the ball at first, right? Was that Saturday's game that he had the error? He's got 3 errors already this season. Could have had a 4th again in the Braves series that they scored a hit. He's at that level of frustration again, and it makes you wonder what does he need to do as an individual to get out of that mental malaise, right? Because that's what it becomes. I mean, we know the sport's hard, and we know that the mental part of the game really gets you sometimes. What does Trey Turner need to do to get back to being Trey Turner again? That's the great question. I don't think any of us have the answer to. Only maybe he has the answer to that.
Yeah. Well, I don't think you can objectively watch what's happened thus far and say, hey, I feel great about what I'm seeing. That being said, I don't know if you caught Phillies post game live yesterday and
missed it.
You know how I feel about Phillies post game live, but man, let me give you a quote from Michael Barkan.
Oh, great. Here we go.
To me, this is a game that separates the men from the boys. Sure, they got the series, but if you have your designs on going deep in the postseason, you win a game like this. And he proceeds to say, against a Nationals team throwing a guy like Mackenzie Gore, who you beat 3 times last year, and he wasn't good. And Anthony, true or false, yesterday's game separated the men from the boys on April 7th to sweep the Nationals.
I know that's a rhetorical question, Bob.
It is a rhetorical question. I mean, like, listen, I know you got to do the show 162 times through the regular season, and you can't sit there and just hedge everything and be like, it's early. You can't do that every day. I know that. And we're coming on here. We're reacting to things. We're talking about Castellanos. We're talking about, you know, Trey Turner's psyche and where he's at. There are conversations to be had, and there are concerns to be had about this team. And it is annoying that they didn't sweep, right?
Yeah.
And it is like, hey, get over 500. Kind of undo that two out of three, starting season 2-4 with a sweep. You kind of just come out of it and say, like, all right, 9 games in, 5-4, that works for me.
Yeah.
So it is an annoying loss because it kind of feels like, you know, you win that game yesterday and you feel much better about everything, right?
Right.
But to say that that game separates the men from the boys, by the way, this is a team that threw 9 games 2 years ago, was 4-5 and made the World Series, and was 3-6 a year ago and was a game away from being in the World Series. I don't think that failing to sweep the Nationals in game 9 separated them contender pretender. And like, people watch it. It's on after the game. That's great. I don't know how you could take those guys seriously. Really, truly.
No, you're right. And I think that the television, and it's not just here, it's everywhere. But I think that the television analysts who are sitting in a studio discussing games before, you know, after a game is over, whatever sport you're watching, are in fact not educating the viewer.
No, you're dumbed down by it. It's truly lowest common denominator content.
You're dumbing down the view. You're dumbing down the fan, and it's unfair to the fans that this is the kind of product that you're putting on your television. It's just unfair.
What gets me about it is like I'm not going to go in on every single individual on the show. There's a rotating
cast
of analysts, and at times they give you some thought-provoking stuff. And I'm not saying that it's every time, but come on, man.
Yeah.
Like, come on. That's one that as soon as it comes out of your mouth, you should say, all right, well, maybe that's a little bit much. Like, it's just, it's so bad. And by the way, that's why talking to a couple people, there's not a lot of respect for that show. From what I gather, inside the walls of the clubhouse at Citizens Bank Park.
That would be correct.
Yeah, I think that's true, right?
Yeah.
So, all right. I mean, listen, here's where I kind of want to go looking ahead. You have the Cardinals this week. You have the Pirates this weekend. Pittsburgh has played very good, solid baseball to start.
Yeah.
I know that we keep talking about this April schedule being advantageous for the Phillies. I'm looking at it and going, well, the next, whatever this is, 7 games here. It was a 4-game series with Pittsburgh this weekend. Yeah. Not a layup.
No.
Not the way the Phillies are going right now.
No, it's not. The layup is next week when you got Colorado and the White Sox back to back. That's your layup. Yeah. Right. But it's leading into that. There are some booby traps along the way here with the Cardinals and the Pirates. Are the Phillies better than both teams? Absolutely. Should they win both series? Absolutely. Will they? That's the thing that I'm concerned about.
Well, the question is not only will they, but like, can they afford to not win these series? And here's where I do think it's kind of fair. We talk about, can the Phillies win the NL East? Can the Phillies stay competitive in the NL East? And so we'll get to the NL East in the big picture in a second, because obviously we all know that Spencer Strider probably is not going to throw a baseball for the Atlanta Braves again this season. How much does that alter the dynamics of the division race? But here's my thing. The Braves now welcome the Mets. And you know how I feel about the Mets. I know that they're showing some signs of life, but not real bullish on the New York Mets. And then they follow with the Miami Marlins, who might win 55 games this year. So if the Phillies continue to kind of do what they do, win 2 out of 3, lose 2 out of 3, and the Braves just blow the doors off the Mets and Marlins in the next 6 games, and let's say now all of a sudden the Phillies are 4.5 back after, 16 games. That's not where you want to be, man. Like, that, if you're being real about this, like, it can get away from you quickly. Like, do I trust the Phillies to kind of run with the Braves and make it interesting this season? I do. But do I trust the Phillies being 5 back before you blink to then cut down this fairly significant deficit? Obviously, there's plenty of time to do it, but this is what you don't want. Like, this is exactly what you do not want to see happen. You don't want to see a sizable gap get created this early on. The Braves have plenty of questions. Breed looks like a mess through 2 starts. Strider's not there, but my God, they hit. And if you watch them this weekend, they got down big early on Friday night. The Diamondbacks kicked Strider's ass. Now we know why. Didn't matter. They just hit their way back, won the game. They got down 6-0 on Saturday night. Didn't matter. They just hit their way back and won the game 9-8. Like, it just doesn't matter, man. So I'm kind of curious what your thoughts are on all of this.
Yo, no, there's everything you've said is 1,000% correct, right? Like, you cannot get too far behind the Braves and let them just coast. You got to put the pressure on them right now. Now's the time to put the pressure on them because they got a pitching situation, right? Their top two, they're missing their ace, their number two guys are still a mess. They got two old guys behind them, right? Who, Sale's not the same pitcher, and yeah. Charlie Morton.
Threw well yesterday, I thought Sale threw the ball all right yesterday.
Yeah, but and then we'll see what Charlie Morton ends up being, as a 40-year-old. And then their bullpen is mediocre to me. I don't think it's a great bullpen. I think that's a Braves' weakness. But you're right. Their lineup is the best in baseball. They hit nonstop, and they find a way to come back, and they beat you, and they beat you, and they beat you, and they did it to the Diamondbacks really three times. I mean, even yesterday, it was a one-run game, and then they tack on there at the end and just kind of, just take the Diamondbacks' soul with the last two runs, right? So, yeah, you have to take advantage of it now because Atlanta will figure it out. They'll identify what their problems are, and they'll go and get players. Add.
Yeah. I mean, they'll that GM is a killer. He's great.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
There's no question they're very willing to spend. I know we kind of have this like narrative here where it's like, well, the Phillies are the big spenders, and they are, and that the Braves kind of just find a way to lock up players for $7 million a year for 15 years. And how do they do it? And they also do that. But when you look at the overall payroll, they're spending money, and they will, I guarantee you, they will spend money to bolster that pitching staff if need be come the middle of this season.
This
is the time to try to get them. And, this is where you say if they don't play well for the next 7 to 10 games and the Braves kind of just continue to be the Braves, you're looking at a situation where you're maybe 4 to 5 to 6 games out of it already. Doesn't mean that they won't make the playoffs. Doesn't mean that they won't make a run in the playoffs or do what they've done the past two seasons. But if the division becomes the focus and you're Atlanta and you're sitting there saying, Freed's been a disaster. We don't have Strider, and we've still managed to build a 5-6 game lead on these guys. that's not a situation that you want to be in if you're the Phillies. One thing that's interesting, I always look at the odds when stuff like this happens, and certainly the NL Cy Young picture has changed. Spencer Strider was the favorite as he took the mound on Friday night, plus 450 to be the NL Cy Young Award winner. Zach Wheeler was second at plus 700. Strider news happens, breaks. Wheeler becomes the favorite now at plus 450 ahead of Zach Gallen. So you think, well, certainly the Braves losing somebody that is favored to win Cy Young Award will alter their NL East odds. It did not. Braves are minus 425 to win the NL East, which is substantially pricier than it was even on opening day. So odds makers don't seem to be too concerned about the future of the Atlanta Braves in terms of their ability to win this division.
You're right, but it's funny, Bob. People should go back and listen to the episode we had Steve Mickelson on, because so far he said, "What's going to happen to the Braves if they lose Strider?"
Well, we're about to find out,
and he was right on that. Right? He's like, "Oh no!" And then he also had the Tigers as a good team out of the bat. Right? It was like, "Well, there we go." I mean, this is the guy. Pays attention to this stuff for whatever reason.
But, he likes the Phillies, though, too.
He does like the Phillies.
How's that going?
Yeah, that's true. That's true. But
all right. Well, so listen, I mean, that's kind of what I have here. Like, I have some notes. We've hit on most of what I wanted to talk about. I will, just say I'm pretty impressed that we've gotten through 33 minutes of this without talking about Johan Rojas. I just don't want to. I just don't want to pile on, but man, they have a problem in center field, Anthony. They have a problem in center field.
And what more are we going to say? I mean, seriously, what more are we going to say?
Yeah.
It's really going to end up – what's probably going to end up happening, Bob, is you're going to end up having Marsh back in center and Merrifield playing in left.
Left, yeah.
That's probably what's going to end up happening. They want to see if Merrifield's
first. Chris Kripate and a Wes Wilson running around, is that what we're going to get here?
Probably.
The next iteration of the Phillies outfield?
That's probably what's going to happen. I mean, the only two things I wanted to just mention quick were when you look at Bryce Harper's numbers now, isn't it amazing that he started the season 0-11?
Yeah. Yeah, and that's exactly why I don't want to react, right? You know, one series in, you're like, oh boy, this is a tough start. He doesn't have a hit, what, five of the first six games? And his numbers are, aside from anybody that plays on the Dodgers, about as good as anyone's right now. So,
yeah, that. So I wanted to mention that. And I also wanted to mention the bullpen. I mean, you mentioned some numbers earlier, but there's in specific, how about Junior Marte?
Yeah.
And the start really that he's good. Come off to, right?
Yeah.
5 2/3. He's only allowed one hit, two walks, four strikeouts. Soft contact he's getting. Like he's been really effective for them. Probably a guy that you really didn't think was going to be, a big part of the bullpen. He was obviously one of the last couple guys that kind of earned a job in spring training. And so far, so good with him. And the other thing I wanted to point out is it looks like they are a little bit more committed to making Alvarado the closer. Which I'm a little bit surprised by. Yeah. I kind of thought that he would be a guy that would be matchup central, especially against a lineup that has tough lefties. Maybe it was just going against the Nationals because it's the Nationals. But they really seem to have him lined up as the last guy. I don't know if that lasts, but I thought that was worth noting here early on.
No, you're absolutely right. And one thing I will note too is that you are now going to have Kirkering return this week, likely scheduled to return this week. He threw Pirates Friday series. Night, faced five batters, struck out four. He did mix in a hit batter there, but he looked good. And you do wonder what that does, because right now, Marte has sort of opened some eyes. He was pretty good in the spring. I'm not saying that we're at a point where you truly trust him, but he's been solid, and maybe he can grow and gain a little bit more trust and take down some more important innings. They used him yesterday in a game that was tight, so we'll see. But you now add Kirkering to the mix. I assume that means Nick Nelson is out of here.
I would think that Nelson's the guy that goes back. Yeah,
we were saying a week ago didn't feel great about the Phillies' right-handed options out of the bullpen. It was Hoffman, and then kind of like hold your breath. Now you get Kirkering back, and it starts to get interesting. I do wonder how they play the late innings. Does Alvarado become more matchup oriented if they like Kirkering to pitch the eighth or ninth? How much, to me, a storyline here in the short term is how much trust do they have in this guy right off the bat? Is it going to be, hey, we're down 4-2 in the sixth, come get some work? We're up 6-2 in the seventh, get some work? Or is it throw him right into the fire and let him rip and see what he does? I'm very curious to see what that looks like here.
Yeah, I am too, Bob. But I mean, they with Hoffman being as good as he's been and with Marte off to a great start, maybe you can kind of ease him in a little bit more and not throw him right into the fire, because you have two righties that have been good for you so far. Yeah. So maybe that's the case. And then once you get him up to speed, then you have it ready to go. And then I think Dominguez had a nice, at least he had a good outing.
And when I say the only guy you really feel good about is Hoffman, that was at the time we had the conversation. And
right,
I'm still bullish on him. I tweeted last week, early in the week, this guy can be nasty pitch to pitch. It's just about finding the consistency. And I know that there's some concerns about the run on his ball. I don't know. I just think that when you look at some of the swings that he generates against some of the game's best players, it's there.
Yeah.
Can you just find a way to get it from appearance to appearance and really batter to batter, pitch to pitch? And if he can do that, I still think that he's a really interesting option for them.
I agree. I give the bullpen a lot of credit. It's been really, really good. It's been as advertised. With the exception of opening day, it's been as advertised. Yeah. So.
And some mop-up action on the Saturday game after Nola kind of.
Yeah.
Notice we didn't talk a whole lot about Aaron Nola. I was happy for him to see that. I think he needed that. And I think that kind of shuts everybody up for the time being, myself included. Because if he walks, was not
the
good.
Four walks
aren't great. But like, all I ask that you do is like, at this point, navigate it.
Yeah.
I don't want to see four walks when you're 5, 6, 7 times in here. Right now, though, off of a bad start, off of a really bad start, just navigate it. And he did
that. And to be fair, a couple of those walks were that probably he had a punch out earlier in the count and didn't didn't.
Well, there were a couple situations too where things escalated and it wasn't necessarily his fault, and he had to work around some defensive stuff too. So, all right. Well, if you want to hit one last thing before we get out of here,
well, we have to talk about the thing that was the big news this weekend, was the Players Association coming out and talking about the rule, the pitch clock impacting pitcher injuries and how it's going to change the game. Yeah. And then I heard you criticizing Amaro earlier for talking about the Harper Turner play, but how about him going off on a tangent, not just once, but twice, feeling the need to bring it back a second time. Hello, team employee. To sit there and say this has nothing to do with this, with the all these injuries, has nothing to do with the clock. It's all about just the fact that guys throw harder now, and everything's about spin rate and velocity. And while he's not completely wrong, Bob, I think that there's a correlation between the two, right? I mean, one, yes, guys are throwing harder, throwing year round, trying to get great spin rate, and that's your arm's not cut out biomechanically to do that, you know, 365 days a year. But at the same time, you're not making it easier for these guys to survive if you're saying you have to pitch every 15 seconds. Sorry, keep doing it. Like, that's going to cause a problem as well. I think that the two things can be true. Such an argument is here in spades, right? I mean, am I mistaken on this?
Yeah, I think you're right. I don't really get where Ruben's coming from on this. I think that the pitch clock can be a factor. And I think that there's not enough data to draw the correlation, but the Players Association is obviously on the pitch clock element of this. And the fact that the matter is that baseball wants to continue the reduction here, like continue to increase pace. And I think that the Players Association is smart in saying, all right, hold on, pump the brakes. Like, can we get some data so we can be proactive about this and not 5 years later after a rash of injuries say, oh, you know what? It was the pitch clock. I believe to a degree that the pitch clock and creating that consistent torque and that consistent strain could elevate the number of injuries. But there's no question in my mind that there is such an emphasis on velocity and spin. And I don't just mean at the major league level. I mean, from the time you're 13 years old, developmentally, the mileage that you're putting on an arm and the amount of strain you're putting on the arm pitch like this is going to have repercussions. It might take 5 years for it to catch up. It may take 10 years for it to catch up, but it's going to catch up. There's no question in my mind that there is a correlation there. And what you're seeing now, even at the high school level, go around South Jersey right now. That's what I know. It's where I coached. There are guys maybe 2-3 deep on certain staffs, high school kids, sophomores, juniors, pumping 86 to 88. Some are touching 90. At the high school level, it used to be 10, 15, 20 years ago, if a kid was touching 90 in South Jersey, it was like, hey, let's take a drive and go see him because that kid has to be special. And now it's just is so commonplace because the training and the development is pointing about velo, velo, velo. That's great because you can go do your perfect game thing. You can put it on Twitter. Here's my winter bullpen session. I'm up to 92 and everyone goes crazy about it. But at the expense of what? And there's an interesting set of tweets, and I don't have it in front of me, and I don't want to waste too much more time here, but there's a guy named Robert Stock, former major league pitcher. He spent like 2 minutes with the Padres and the Red Sox, and he's a pretty interesting Twitter follower. And he was talking about this, like, and how there are so many guys that can throw with such significant velocity now that if you don't do it, someone else will. So it really puts the pressure on you to do this. And it's just kind of creating this cycle where it's all about velo. It's all about velo. It's all about throwing 11 months a year where it's just not natural and people aren't built for it. And you're seeing this happen. It's really interesting.
Yeah, it is. And this, just the one, put a little bow on this. This shows you why the Phillies value guys like Wheeler and Nola, who can throw so many innings and not, you know, and be so durable. Right. I mean, that's why there's so much value for those kinds of pitchers, because you can't flame out. And again, I said this before, credit the Phillies medical team. They really seem, knock on wood, they really seem to do a good job in managing their pitchers over the last few years to ensure that nobody has one of these long-term injuries, Andrew Painter aside.
baseball has to rectify their level at Major League Baseball's level, but it's kind of an epidemic in a way. Like, it needs to be figured out at the lower levels. Like, the such intensity on velocity. How do you, if you're 13 and you want to be seen, you're 17 and you want to be seen, velo, how do you navigate that? You know, so until they figure out a way to kind of paint a broad stroke to figure this out, it's going to continue to happen.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I know that we're pressed for time here. So you can follow Anthony on X or Twitter at AntSamPhilly. You can follow me at Bob_Wankel. Make sure that you're checking out Crossed Up wherever you get your shows, YouTube, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, anywhere else. Make sure that you're checking out RedOctoberPhilly.com, daily newsletter, twice a week a newsletter, Mondays and Fridays. Try to get it out there before 9. It's coming before noon today. Sorry about that. And we will be back later this week, and we'll talk soon.